There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Big thanks to the boys. We'll be back down to the Jumeirah Golf Estates for the closing stages of the penultimate round of the season on the European Tour. So we'll be down there between now and 5 o'clock. More from Robbie, Chris and the rest of the team in just a little while. But it is us shifting our focus up here to Barasti, where the game is always on. Plenty to look forward to over the next couple of hours. We're joined by an all-star cast. And what are we going to get on our fangs into? We are going to get our fangs into the Nations League. All sorts of games kicking off in the Nations League, UEFA Cup, Nations League Cup between now and of course the end of play. Plus we'll tell you what's happening in the cricket, lots of international cricket going on around the world. There is rugby aplenty to look forward to on the big screen down here at Barasti, so make sure if you're looking for somewhere to watch that rugby, get yourself down here. We'll mark your card as to what you can expect there. ATP tennis finals as well, have the latest on that one, and of course all the other developing stories in the world of sport. If you'd like to have your say, you can do that now. How do you do it? You text us on 4001. You get in touch online at Dubai iSport or via any of the individual handles. But best thing to do is really get yourself down here to Barasti, where the game is always on.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Come on down to Barasti, where the game is always on. Plenty of sport to look forward to between now and when we pull stumps at 7 o'clock. We'll go live down to the DP World Tour Championship, the end of the race to Dubai, as I mentioned, in just a little while. So who's going to be talking us through the action between now and the close of play? No Premier League action to bring you today, because of course the focus will be on the UEFA Nations League. We have got the former Middlesex, Essex, Hampshire and England cricketer, also a man who has coached here in the UAE at the very top of the game. He was the interim coach for the international team, the UAE international team that have gone on to achieve so much. Oasis, it's good to have you with us, Oasis Shah.
Hello Tom, how are you?
Very well indeed, my friend, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
Good to have you here, really kind of you to join us here from our rooftop position up here at Barasti. Going to talk cricket with you in due course. We've also got alongside us as well the former online sports editor for the Daily Mail Online, a man who is now breaking new ground, all things online here in the UAE. The Fortune is with us. Matt Fortune, good to have you on board.
Thanks very much, Tom.
All well?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much.
Good, lads. Now, listen, I know that we are all sick to our back teeth about golf at the moment. It's all you're hearing these days, you know. We'll have the boys, of course, live from the course for us in just a few moments' time, so we'll get the latest from that. But I've got to ask you fellas about your golf as well. Play it, talk a good game, like to watch it. Matt Fortune.
Well, I am hated throughout the golfing community for having only ever played one round of golf, and it was at Turnberry. About a year and a half after the Open course, I was fortunate enough to go and stay at the hotel as a guest of the Colin Montgomerie Academy that's up there, and I was invited round to play a round of golf on what was the fifth best course in the world at the time, and utterly humiliated myself and have never gone back to a golf course since.
You didn't do it justice, no?
No, I think I left a club on the 10th green. I shanked one into the bushes about 25 yards down the first tee. I didn't have any idea what I was doing. The director of golf, an American guy, very lovely man, was incredibly patient with me, but I think he was pretty keen to hurry me off his course.
Was there?
It really was,
shaking
yeah.
Shaking your head and tutting. Matt, good to have you. What about you, Ace? Obviously, there are plenty of international cricketers who love their golf. Are you one of those?
Yeah, I do enjoy playing golf. I can't say I enjoy watching it, but really? I tell you what, I really enjoy playing it. I would probably say when I was playing cricket, my early days, especially in the on the golfing course, I didn't quite get to the grips of, you know, you've got to roll your wrist on the ball when yeah. you're playing golf, whereas you keep your wrist cocked when you play cricket, and I couldn't quite get the concept of it. So my balls all on the golf course would always disappear, sort of over extra cover, and I was forever in the bushes. It was just a nightmare. But since I finished playing cricket, I must admit, I do enjoy a round of golf. Buggy's got to be there. I'm not walking the whole 18 holes. It's too long, especially in the heat out here. So Yeah, I'd probably say, you know, probably today looks like a wonderful day for golf.
It always fascinates me when boys come on tour, when cricketers go on tour as well, that the golf clubs usually get packed first for a lot of the players rather than the coffin itself. Best golfer that you ever played with? Who's the cricketer who fancies himself as a golfer?
Yeah, just talking about, you know, you said about the golf course, golf clubs get packed first. I think Paul Collingwood was one of them. He would pack his golf clubs first and then worry about what bat he's going to, or how many bats he's going to take on tour. Probably I'll have to say Collie, Andrew Strauss, those guys are very, very good at golf. I mean, any day off, you know, most guys will be by the pool. Big sunny's on, but these two were on a golf course from like 8 in the morning. And then in the evening, they'll turn up red raw. And you're like, ah, golf. And they're like, yep, whole day.
Who is the others? Mahela Jayawardena, apparently he's a good golfer as well, loves his golf. Brian Lara loves his golf, doesn't he? Plays in a lot of pro-ams as well. Shane Warne, he's a bit of a golf fan as well.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's famous footage, isn't there? I don't know if you remember when Brian Lara was, when he broke his world record, 375, for the first time. And there's a footage of him on the morning when he was not out overnight. Yeah. And there's footage of him hitting golf balls at like 6 in the morning. I mean, he talked us through that, and he was saying that, you know, I couldn't sleep that much that night. And I wonder why that was. Yeah. And he was videoed, you know, hitting golf balls early in the morning, and then obviously went on to break Sir Garfield Sobers' record. What a morning that was for him, mate.
Plenty of sporting celebrities down at the golf over the last few days. Trevor Stephen, who's obviously based here in the UAE now, was spotted down there, as have been a number of the Liverpool squad. All those that not on international duty seem to have made their way over to Dubai to enjoy a bit of the golf. Adam Lallana was down there, James Milner, to mention but a few. I'm sure they're tuned in on Thursday night to see how England fared in, what were we calling this game at Fortune? Was it a testimonial? Was it a full international? Was it a friendly? Was it an ease up for Wayne Rooney? What was it?
It turned into an ease up for Wayne Rooney, I think. It was actually handled a lot better than I anticipated. You and I, Ron, last week talking about it, and I said I felt a little bit dirty by the whole concept of paying tribute to one player. There's been so many players before him that are more deserving, probably unfair. This is England's record goal scorer after all, but it just felt like everything went against what Gareth Southgate has been trying to do for the England squad over the last couple of years, taking it forward, not being bogged down by the pass. But actually, I thought it was handled really well. Rooney got his run out. He had a tearful end. We were told after the game that he addressed the younger players in the dressing room afterwards, kind of took Southgate's frustrations from what Southgate felt was a disappointing 45 minutes, 90 minutes, and really provided something to that fringe squad. Really look at the likes of Jadon Sancho, he would have been invigorated by having someone like Wayne Rooney and such an occasion. I actually thought it turned out all right.
3-0 they ran out as eventual winners against the States as well. Is that a good tune-up for England, because they've got more pressing matters tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's England v Croatia. Of course, the last time these guys played, six weeks ago, behind closed doors out there in the outback of Croatia, they shipped the game away from Zagreb, but still the brilliant story of about 20-odd England fans on a hill watching that game from afar. There'll be a lot more in Wembley when the two teams meet tomorrow, I believe. And it's a fascinating situation. It's England v Croatia. The winners could win the group and the losers will be relegated. There's no in-between time. And this comes, of course, as Croatia beat Spain a couple of nights ago. Incredible game, scoring with pretty much the last kick of the game, overturning what was a 6-0 defeat the first game after the World Cup. So those two go head-to-head. Spain just stuck in the middle, really. But the funny thing is, if those two draw, Spain then get promoted from Group A into the finals, which take place in June. It should be a good one. England will welcome back all the big guns. Kane will go back up top. We expect Ross Barkley to play in that position where Dele Alli played so well last time out. Jesse Lingard will probably drop Rashford and Sterling to come back in. It'll be interesting to see, a real test to Southgate's team. To answer your question, was it a tune-up? I don't think so, because I don't think many of the players involved will start.
We'll have more on the football, plenty of football for you to look forward to throughout. But I just want to pick up on that the whole idea of the testimonial, because we've got Oasis with us here at the moment. And obviously, testimonial years are crucial to cricketers coming towards the end of their career. They get an entire season, the club gives them that testimonial year. We see it with a couple of the rugby players. You don't see it in football that often, do you? That nations give great servants to international teams, the opportunity to say farewell for their last chance. Have you got anything? I mean, it wasn't billed officially as a testimonial, but that's the way the sort of media jumped onto it. Do you think Wayne Rooney was deserving of that?
I certainly do think so. You know, look, I totally understand what Gareth Southgate is trying to do with the England football team. I totally understand that. But what also he's got to remember that, you know, the generation we live in, we also got to provide heroes for the kids of today, yeah. Right? You know, you got to have people looking up to sporting heroes. You've got to have the likes of Wayne Rooney. There's nothing wrong with giving him farewell. Why? Because A, he's deserved it. Yeah. He's been a serious footballer for England, leading run. Leading goal scorer for England. And we gotta make a big deal out of these guys. Yeah. I really do believe that, because we need. My son, I want my son not to look up to Ronaldo and Messi. I want him to look up to Wayne Rooney. Yeah. He's English. How about you look up? Let's have some more English heroes out there. Yeah. You know, Beckham and people like that. So for me, there is that responsibility for the coaches of England to get that hype up going for the heroes.
You know, why do we not have more testimonials in football?
I think there's so much...
Because they've made so much cash anyway.
It's almost like there's so much focus already on the players all the time. It's roadblock in the media, whatever they do. Even nowadays, Marcus Rashford goes out shopping with his mum and it's a news story. There's so much focus on them. Actually, I almost think, and fans would hate to admit it, they're almost... They're desensitized to those footballers now, I think. I totally take your point. I don't have kids and I get the point that you want them to have someone to look up to. And as I said earlier, someone like Jadon Sancho looking at Wayne Rooney in the dressing room will be really helpful. But I don't think there's any need necessarily to throw them onto the pitch. Rooney can be around, can be involved in the club. And Southgate's done excellent work in bringing players to St George's Park during the practice for those games, during the two-week camps. And I think there's value there. But taking a massive gloss off of what is a developmental project really for England, I think just takes away from that, and that's why I don't think we see enough of it. I had an interesting story. It wasn't a testimonial, it was a lovely anecdote that in Norway, Henning Berg, the ex-Manchester United defender, was given I think it was 26 minutes, which is the amount of time you have to play in order to get a cap, because he was stuck on 99 caps for Norway a few years ago, retired, and the Norwegians gave him 26 minutes at the start of the game to reach that 100 caps, which I think is a little bit sillier than this and a bit of a tribute, but it was quite fun, I thought.
We do see testimonials in football, don't we? But they're usually sort of they're not as competitive as the one that we've saw for Wayne Rooney. We don't see it from international, we see it for clubs, don't we? The sort of farewell games, whatever, they usually happen a couple of years after their career has come to an end, and it's a mix of celebrities and players coming together.
I think that's a case of how often does it happen where great players or one club men will leave clubs at the end of their career. It's normally because players have left, not necessarily in controversial circumstances, but you look at my club, Arsenal, Patrick Vieira was sold all of a sudden to Juventus. He would have been deserving of that sort of option. Thierry Henry, again, off to Barcelona, where nobody really expected it to happen. So that would have been the case. But with internationals, you kind of see it winding down. And Rooney was, I think Allardyce tried to get rid of him, and then he was brought back in and then tried to get back out again. So I think that's why we see it at club level, because club fans who live and breathe that club all of the time don't get the opportunity to say goodbye.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. In fact, we're live all over the UAE today, because after a short break, we're live from Jumeirah Golf Estates.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai I Sport.
Welcome back to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from the Barasti rooftop. We're up here on the rooftop garden. Big crowd in, and they are just making their way up from the beach and heading up to the various decks down here at Barasti. If you're looking for somewhere to watch your sport, get thee to Barasti. We're going to be here till 7 o'clock, building up to the rugby internationals a little later on. As I mentioned at the top of the show, though, in this first hour of the show, we are sharing the time with the boys down at the Jumeirah Golf Estates, because it's the penultimate round of the DP World Tour Championships, the season ender for the Race to Dubai. So in fact, it's the penultimate round of the season, which is coming to a conclusion at the moment. As you've been listening throughout the weekend, Robbie Greenfield, Chris McCarty and the rest of the team have been bringing us bang up to date with all the latest from the course. So let's head back down there. Any big changes in the last 25 minutes or so, Chris McCarty?
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom. Yes, an awful lot of changes in the past 24 hours and an awful lot of changes over the past 24 or 25 minutes as well, Tom, because Danny Willett, a good friend of ours, I remember he joined us down at the Barasti on the Grill about 4 or 5 years ago now, and he was talking about his journey, one day wanting to compete with the big boys in world golf. He did that, of course, winning the Omega Dubai Desert Classic back in 2016. He followed that up just a few short weeks later by winning the US Masters. We've been talking about it, Robbie, all weekend long, the fact that his form dropped off the cliff a little bit. In actual fact, I think he split up with Pete Cowan, his golf coach as well. He took it in a different direction. My goodness, though, what a few days he's put together. In the last 25 minutes as well, he has catapulted himself right into contention here at the 2018 DP World Tour Championship.
He certainly has, Chris. We're watching him on the 17th now. I can tell you he's fired his tee shot on that par 3 into about 15 feet, so he'll have yet another birdie opportunity. That off the back of birdies on 14, 15 and 16. That was his fifth birdie on the 16th of the day. He has had a bogey as well. So Danny Willett, 4 under par for his day's work so far. That puts him tied for the lead with the American, Patrick Reed, another Masters champion. Yes. So we've got the 2016 and the 2018 Masters champions both at the top of this leaderboard. That gives you an idea of the kind of quality of the golfers on show, Chris.
And then 4 shots back, we've got the 2017 US Masters champion, Sergio Garcia, putting himself into contention heading into the final round tomorrow. He's 5 under through his 18 today, a 67, a round of the week for Sergio. 4 shots back, yes, but of course, you can't count out anyone. And I think back to Gary Stahl. I know we're heading on down to the capital, but remember Gary Stahl? What did he start the day behind Martin Keimer?
Oh my word, that is a great, you just pulled that out of nowhere. You've reached for the top shelf with that particular reference. Gary Stahl, yeah, I think he was something in the region of 10 shots. The only one I remember was, I think on the sixth hole, when Martin Keimer reached the sixth hole, he was 10 shots clear of Gary Stahl, who of course would end up shooting a 65. Keimer would shoot a 75 and Gary Stahl would end up winning by a shot or two the Abu Dhabi Championship. But that was, wow, what a story. That just goes to show that it's never over until it's over in sport and in particular in golf.
Yeah, as Robbie rightly points out, Patrick Reed, Danny Willett, two former US Masters champions. I say former, Patrick Reed is the current Masters champion. They lead the way on 14 under par. Then come five men, 2 shots back on 12 under. And really, Robbie, Danny Willett and Patrick Reed, okay, they will take a lot of the plaudits and a lot of the headlines given the fact they do lead this tournament. The story of the day, for my money, is undoubtedly Lee Westwood, inaugural winner here back in 2009, should I say, and he has put together a round of 65 today, 7 under par, to move himself to 12 under. And what a story brewing if he was to come out tomorrow, shoot the lights out of it, and win this title yet again, 10 years on.
Yeah, a winner last week down in South Africa, Gary Player's tournament. Tearful in the aftermath of that. In his Sky Sports interview, Lee Westwood, he allowed his emotions to get the better of him in that moment. And because, I think, the fact that he hadn't won since 2014, over 4 years had gone by since he tasted success at the European Tour level. To win a big one, the penultimate tournament of the year, and now to come here at a place he won in that inaugural year, all those many moons ago, I think a record score, 23 under par. It remained a record until Henrik Stenson broke it a few years back. But Lee Westwood, certainly a player who knows how to play well on this course. And today he did just that. He went out in 32 with 4 birdies, came back in 33 with 3 birdies. No bogeys whatsoever on the card. So Lee Westwood, suddenly, having been a vice captain at the Ryder Cup, having thought his Ryder Cup playing days were over, tipped as a future captain of that very tournament, suddenly now he's mixing it with the very top of the tree, and he's back in the winner's circle and potentially looking at back-to-back victories.
As for the leading lights on this European Tour, Rory McIlroy, I'm sure, will be a frustrated man this evening. A 1-under-par round, a 71 for Rory, 9-under, so there is a chance he will start tomorrow 5 shots off the lead. He'll be frustrated more than anything with that, on what we like to christen as moving Saturday. Certainly Mark Archer does when it comes to a Saturday. As we heard yesterday, that is very much just a construct of we, the media, that no one really in the golf game consider Saturday to be a moving day, Robert, but he will be undoubtedly frustrated with a 1-under-par round.
Yeah, just didn't quite get going and struggled a little bit off the tee today, did Rory, and of course we know that driving is very much the crux of his game, and very much when he's driving well, he's a very, very difficult player to beat. Coupling that with good putting, he's almost unbeatable. When he's struggling a little bit and he's put a new driver in the bag, he's been confident and been talking and making all the right noises about being pleased with that new addition to the bag, but the fact is he just hasn't quite been his imperious and consistent best this week. He's not out of it by any means. He's 9 under par in the clubhouse after a round of 71. That puts him 5 back, as you say. And okay, he needs to go out and shoot super low tomorrow. We're talking 63, 64, maybe then, just maybe, he gets into the frame. But for Rory, it'll be, you know, a lot to think about in the off-season. He seems to have already made his plans as regards a much bigger focus on the PGA Tour, less events on the European Tour, and a more concerted effort at that calendar month between April and September, where the vast majority of the big tournaments and the major championships reside.
Francesco Molinari, the man that leads the race to Dubai, a 2-under round 70 for him today. He's 5-under, 9 shots behind the leaders. And what of Tommy Fleetwood, the man, the only man that could stop Francesco Molinari being crowned European number one? He's had a day to forget as well. A 74, a 2-over round from the man from Southport, one of just 12 men over par this afternoon. 6-under par, a shot ahead of Francesco Molinari. That means little to Tommy. He needs to win this if he's to have any chance of retaining that European number one status that, of course, he won in spectacular fashion 12 months ago, Robert. He will be frustrated, given the fact we were talking to former Everton midfielder Graham Stewart a little earlier. There's a few boys over from Merseyside watching Tommy Fleetwood, but a frustrating day for he.
Never got going for Tommy, yeah, struggled, and I don't know whether that was down to the pressure of knowing he had to win the tournament or whether he just simply had one of those days at the office. But I think we can say this, Chris, I think Francesco Molinari is our Race to Dubai champion, because Tommy Fleetwood, I know that funny things happen, I know you just mentioned Gary Stahl, but come on, he's 6 under par, he's 8 shots yeah. now behind the leader, and not only that, he's got 23 golfers in front of him. His race is run.
It certainly looks that way. We are heading back now to Barasti, the grill, Tom Ucker, Matthew Fortune, and delighted to be joined as well by the England cricketer, Oais Shah. They'll be picking up when we come back. We will be here all the way through until 5 o'clock. We will be jumping in for another quick update to bring you bang up to date with the climax of day three. But the big news, Patrick Reed, Danny Willett, as things stand, they lead the way in this 10th edition of the DP World Tour Championship. 14 under par. They're very much laid the gauntlet down. Catch us if you can.
It's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
A couple of results to bring you from a little earlier on. Australia beating South Africa. Sorry, South Africa beating Australia in the international T20 match between the two. South Africa, 108 for the loss of 6 wickets. The match was reduced to 10 overs each. Australia, 87 for 7 for them. South Africa winning by 21 runs there. Live action still being played here in the UAE, though. Pakistan taking on New Zealand as we speak. Pakistan bowled out for 227. New Zealand trail Pakistan by 40 runs with 9 wickets remaining. New Zealand 153 all out. They're 34 for 1 in their second innings there. Oais Shah's with us here at the moment as well. A man who's knows the grounds here in the UAE very well, both as a player but also as the former interim coach for UAE cricket. Pakistan just play these facilities and these conditions so well that they're so tough to beat here, aren't they?
Yeah, they're ridiculously tough. They don't seem to lose. I guess it's probably as close as conditions you'll get to playing in Pakistan. There is, look, a new ball will move around anyway, but I think the real skill of when the Pakistani bowlers come into it, because you've got to remember, yes, the batters have to get the runs, but you've got to have bowlers who can bowl teams out if you want to go on and win the test match. And that's where they're really good is, as the ball gets older, to get the ball to reverse swing out here, they're probably as good as anyone in the world. They just play the conditions unbelievably well. And it's been going on for generations. I mean, Wasim Akram, Imran Khan, Waqar Yunus. I know they didn't play that much here. I know they played some cricket in Sharjah. And in those days when those guys were playing, yes, they were playing a lot of cricket in Pakistan. But, I mean, Pakistan were unbeaten in Pakistan. I mean, reverse swing, those pitches are dead. Yeah. But they just know how to get the ball to go through the air, swing in late. I mean, Waqar Yunus in his pomp, jeez. You've got to have steel toe caps to be facing that guy. But look, they just play the conditions very well. But the key really is that old ball.
Obviously, cricket's so key to to Pakistan, the country. It's a cricket-mad country. It is sad that more international cricket is not being played in Pakistan at the moment for one reason or another. They're choosing to play their games here, and certainly when it comes to tourists, they're choosing to play Pakistan in these conditions here. How important is it for cricket to come together and try and get more international cricket back in Pakistan?
Look, it's hugely important for Pakistan cricket. I know they've had the PSL in this country for the last two or three years, and every year they're trying to get more and more games back in Pakistan. So I believe the coming season, which is 2019 February, I believe that both the semi-finals and the final is now going to be played in Pakistan. But I think if you look at the bigger picture, everybody was waiting for these elections to happen recently. And they were all, obviously the cricket lovers were obviously secretly hoping that Imran Khan would be in charge. And obviously, as it's turned out, he is in charge now. And I think people are hoping, they are very much hoping that Imran Khan can do whatever he needs to do to get the state of the country right, so that we can play cricket in Pakistan. Because it's tragic. I mean, people of Pakistan love cricket as much as people of India, people of England, people of South Africa, Australia. You know, they've been deprived of cricket for best part of what, 10, 12 years or 14 years, however long that episode was with the Sri Lankan touring team. And look, it's a really, really sad situation that they have to come to Dubai to play their cricket. But I think, fingers crossed, maybe in the next 12, 24 months, perhaps. If Imran Khan's listening, please try and do something and get some cricket back into Pakistan. Come on.
Pakistan, 227 for their first innings. New Zealand, 153 all out. And they're currently 38 for one in their second. Still trailing Pakistan by 36 runs with 9 wickets remaining. Ravalan Williamson, the two men currently at the crease. Latham was the man to go a little earlier off the bowling of Hassan. What I'm liking at the moment, and given that convincing victory for Pakistan against Australia in the previous series, Pakistan sharing the plaudits with New Zealand, but for rain, Pakistan would have won that series as well, coming in against New Zealand, the shorter version. But it's good to see Pakistan performing in all codes of the game. We know that their T20 cricket has going through something of a renaissance in recent years. The one-day cricket seems to be coming back as well. But the fact that they are now a world power at the test level as well, it's good to see. I know that they've had the problems in the past, but obviously the right moves are being made from the coaching and management point of view to see them competing at the very highest level.
Very much so. I think ever since Mickey Arthur and Azam Mahmood have come together, I know Azam Mahmood is the bowling coach, and obviously Mickey Arthur he's a head coach. There's been a big shift, definitely into fitness. I know for a fact that, I know Mickey reasonably well, and I spoke to him about that, and he said, look, I've been really trying to target these boys, get them really fit. And because, you know, so much cricket is being played now, you have to be fit to be able to perform and to go on to win series, and which they have done. So look, they're reaping the rewards now of all that hard work that's been put into place by the likes of Mickey Arthur and Azam Mahmood, helping them how to bowl in these conditions and teaching all the skills those guys have. And I think it's, you know, you got to take your hat off to the guys. You know, they're doing really well. I mean, they won the ICC Champions Trophy last year against the mighty India. I mean, I think going into the final, everybody made India favourites. I mean, even myself, watching how India operate, you would have thought India should walk that game. Well, Pakistan had different ideas, and they were very impressive in England. And they seem to be able to adapt to different conditions. Yeah. You know, they went to England, they adapted. Obviously, they're adapting here, and they've been unbeaten here. And like you mentioned, their 2020 record. Geez, that's amazing, eh? They're on fire.
So, are they a genuine contender for the World Cup next year, do you think? Because obviously a lot's been made about England in English conditions. The England ODI setup is one of the best in the world at the moment. They've enjoyed some great success. But Pakistan cannot be discounted because of that ability to adapt.
Very much so. I mean, even historically, if you look at Pakistan, they might be struggling in series leading up to the World Cup. But when the World Cup seems to be on, they just seem to turn it on. They, you know, they have caused some serious upsets. And they're a very dangerous team, especially with their bowling lineup, which has really impressed me. They've got variety, they've got spin, they've got seam. But also, the ability to be able to reverse swing the ball, that, again, I keep going on about reverse swing, that is where your Pakistani bowlers are that much more effective. When the ball is not swinging around, they get that ball to swing through the air. And that's something, you know, that's going to help them in England. I mean, we had a wonderful summer just gone. Yeah. It was a hot summer. So if we have a similar summer next year, I can see that ball reversing. And, you know, I think Pakistan would definitely be up there. And touching on what you said about England, I mean, look, we I believe, have the best opportunity. I know everyone says it every time the World Cup's on. This is our best opportunity to win the World Cup. But, I mean, if you look at our form, I mean, recently we beat Sri Lanka. In Sri Lanka, you know, it's a perfect... For me, our team has everything. Yeah. We have power. We have, you know, the ability to put innings together. We can consolidate when the pressure's on. And we can really... I mean, we've got the highest score in the world when we beat Australia. So, look, I mean, we've got everything. All the boxes ticked. And hopefully, the boys can go out there and perform next summer.
And they've got strength and depth as well, as we've seen in this recent series. And we'll talk more in more detail about the England-Sri Lanka test match ongoing at the moment. Fascinating final day of that one in prospect tomorrow. I'm not sure we'll see the whole day, that's for sure. Probably a session as long as the weather's good to us. But in terms of England's ODI approach, I mean, England came in for a bit of criticism in years gone by for the way they were dealing with their ODI cricket as opposed to their Test cricket. Something's changed though. What is that, Oase? What's changed with the ECB, with England cricket, that there is so much more professionalism around the one-day structure?
Well, I know ever since Andrew Strauss took over, I know the fact that, you know, I think he publicly said that, you know, we're going to try and focus on white ball cricket. And they've certainly done that, you know, trying to allow their players to go to IPL, allow their players, if they're not involved, to be able to go and play all these different leagues. I really feel that if you're able to go and see how other players perform and how other players prepare, how other countries prepare, you're only going to improve by playing amongst some of the top players in the world. And right now the opportunity is in the 2020 game. So they've been able to do that, access all that information and bring that back into the England team. And now Owen Morgan, I mean, he's a very, very impressive young man. I mean, I had the opportunity to play with Owen a lot at Middlesex. And he's, you know, he's a smart guy, he's a shrewd captain, and he knows exactly what he wants from his team. There's very much a no-fear brand of cricket being played. You know, I mean, if you watch England play, even if they're three down or four down, they still manage to be able to play their shots. Yeah. I know it helps because they've got strength and depth in the likes of, say, I mean, you've got your Bairstow. I know he's opening the batting, but you've got that sort of power up the top. But then as the lower down goes, I mean, people like Adil Rashid are batting 10. Yeah. I mean, that guy can bat. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they've got that depth so they can still keep hitting the boundaries. And of course, you know, hitting the boundaries, you're going to take some risks. And if you end up getting out, it doesn't matter because you've got plenty of talent in that team. I just think we're a very well-rounded team. We've got everything in place. And I really think it's our best opportunity to go on and we'll win the World Cup. And hats off to Andrew Strauss to make that change, that focus into white ball cricket.
Have central contracts helped, do you think? Because obviously that's something that is... when we're looking for evidence of why or how things have changed, there was chat that central contracts allowed the creme de la creme to be able to focus on their game a little more, and yet there is that reverse argument, isn't there? They're not playing enough county cricket and therefore getting into the mix. Where do you sit on central contracts?
I think central contracts are a very good thing. Yeah. It allows the player, if he is good enough to play for England, then you've got to be able to manage that player because of the fact that these are the elite sportsmen. Now, elite sportsmen, the reason why they're called the elite, because they think a particular way and they can perform at a certain level. Yeah. Now, let's not put them into county cricket day in, day out on their days off, because that concentration is you know, you can't just tap into that zone anytime you want. There's only a certain amount of hours of concentration you can have. And that's important to look after those sort of players so that when they do play, they can perform at that optimum level. So I really believe that downtime, that rest is very important. so that when they come and put that England shirt on, they are firing on all cylinders. I don't want a tired Owen Morgan. I don't want a tired Jimmy Anderson. Yeah. I want a very fresh Jimmy Anderson, so he can get Virat Kohli out, or, you know, whoever, all these top players in the world. So for me, that's very important as an England fan. Yeah. And I think, and I'm a huge fan of Central Context just because of that.
It's just, I mean, you spoke about that strength in depth, and I suppose that's a nice problem for Trevor Bayliss and the rest of the selection committee to have, isn't it? But when you're looking at specifically at that one-day team and moving ahead and looking with one eye on the World Cup in England next year, you know, trying to find a place for someone like Sam Billings or Alex Hales or the players that are coming through the ranks at the moment, both the Curran brothers as well, it's a nice problem to have and a bit of a headache as well. And I suppose that's also raising the game of those that are in the team at the moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, best way to, you know, you look at that problem, that's fine. But, I mean, if you look at our cricket, say, 20 years ago, right, we didn't have that problem. You know, the one-day team almost picked itself. Yeah. There wasn't anyone in county cricket going, you know, maybe get this guy in. And you thought, nah, he's not good enough. Yeah. And even if that guy came into the team, he wasn't performing. Now, you look at the likes of the Curran brothers, like you mentioned. They're not even making the one-day team. And we have seen how well they've performed when given the opportunity. You know, times have changed. The amount of talent England has now, it's scary. I mean, for me to sit here and be very, very confident that even if England have a bad World Cup next year, they'll probably make the semi-final. That's how good our team is. Yeah. I mean, wow, that's saying something. In the past, we were like, you know, I'm not sure if England will get even to the quarterfinal. You know, time to change for England cricket, and we're in a very, very good position. And it's all because of those things that have been put into place behind the scenes, like your central contracts, focus on white ball cricket, and also, you know, looking after as the guys are getting older, you know, likes of Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad. The board has made the tough call to say, you know what? You haven't quite done it in the white ball cricket. Yeah. You are getting a bit older. Let's just look after you in the red ball cricket and give the youngsters an opportunity in the white ball cricket. And they have gone on and performed. So, you know, again, hats off to ECB. They're doing some very, very good stuff at the moment.
Those are the thoughts of Owen Shah. He's here with us live on the grill today. Matt Fortune also with us, and we're going to be here with you through until 7 o'clock. Lots of sports to talk about. In fact, stay with us because coming up in just a few minutes' time, we're going to be down to the golf club. Why? Because closing stages of round number 3, DP World Tour Championship. It is the penultimate round, final round tomorrow. We'll see how they come back with Chris and Robbie after this.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Big sports stories, big sports names as well in town. Top 60 of the European Tour, and they are being followed by some big names as well. As Chris McCarthy was saying a little earlier on, former Evertonian players here, current Liverpool players in town, and a certain Lionel Messi also here in the UAE. Matt Fortune is tracking his progress, so we'll try and convince Lionel to come on down to Barasti at some point this afternoon. In the meantime, though, we need to get back down to Jumeirah Golf Estates, where our fellas are on course at the moment to talk us at home, because they're coming back in for the final pairings, I should say, of this, the penultimate round of the DP World Tour Championship. Chris McCarthy, Robbie Greenfield are down there. Chris, quick question for you just to lead into this one. Caddies, we're just having a little bit of a debate with the boys here. How important are caddies? Are they make or break for players?
Oh, good question that, to kick things off, Tom. Make or break? No, I don't think they are. We had Colin Byrne, who was the caddy for Retief Goosen when he won the US Open a few years back now. Ernie Els, the caddy of, now the caddy of Rafa Cabrera Bayo, and he was saying yesterday, wasn't he, Robbie, that the caddies, essentially, they just get a front row view at what these boys do, and they're very good, the top level golfers these days. But as I pointed out to him as well, yeah, they're very good, but the caddies can make those mistakes that ensure that they don't win the tournament. So I think I've answered that by saying, yes, they're important, but the players really make them look good, correct?
I think if you asked a caddy, they would say they are make or break, because they want a job at the end of the day, and these boys do okay. I think it was Gareth Lord, Henrik Stenson's caddy, who actually had enough money to buy a Ferrari in 2013 after Henrik Stenson's prodigious year, where he earned, I think, something like $21 million in prize money. And if Gareth Lord's taking a 10% cut of that, he's doing pretty well.
2.1.
What was it? Steve Williams was, that was the always the oft quoted stat about Steve Williams, was that he was New Zealand's best paid sportsman, which I always kind of, I think he was the one that was pushing that particular narrative, but that didn't end so well with Tiger Woods, did it?
It did not. We are joined as well, Tom, I'm delighted to say, by a good friend of ours, Nick Tarrant. He is the head honcho of the European Tour over here in Dubai. He's joined us for our final little wrap up as we gear up and certainly head towards the final stages of day three down here at the DP World Tour Championship. Nicholas, great to have you alongside us. Happy with the day's play out there and what's going on behind the scenes as well?
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Robbie. We've had a spectacular day here at Jumeirah Golf States. I'm just seeing, is it Matt Willett and, it's been a long day, by the way.
Matt Wallace and Danny Willett. Is that some hybrid, Nick, that has just fused together, players?
I think the 3:45 a.m. call this morning, the alarm is taking its toll. But the weather looks, it's nice, cool, actually, as we're here over the range. The sky a little grey, but despite Chris hearing thunder and perhaps imagining lightning, everything's fine. We're looking at the leaderboard. We're seeing Alex Noren there on the range and a few other players who are winding down, warming up and the like. So, we've had a big crowd. I expect to be able to announce record crowds tomorrow night, with tomorrow being a holiday. So everyone's welcome to come along. Free entry. If you haven't registered, still come along and you'll be well looked after. And a great leaderboard. We have Masters champion Patrick Reed and Danny Willett. Danny seems to be, is that a birdie putt on 18?
It certainly is a birdie putt. Let's stay with this one if we can, because Danny Willett at 14 under par, alongside, as you say, Nick, Patrick Reed. This is a chance to separate himself and get to 15 under par. What a story this would be. We've talked about Lee Westwood's resurgence. Danny Willett, another player who struggled for an awfully long time with his game, spent an entire year effectively in the doldrums, having had that amazing 2016 season in which he won the Desert Classic. He followed that up by winning a green jacket, his first and to date only major. He's standing over a putt of about 8 to 9 feet here on the 18th green, a packed crowd watching this one. The Englishman in his navy shirt, white trousers, putt balls on its way, and it's just drifted past the outside of the hole. So Danny Willett will stay at 14 under par. We'll give you a full leaderboard breakdown in just a moment, but I want to break away very quickly, because given the fact that, Chris, we've spent a large part of the last 2 days talking about grassroots and the importance of supporting that and really encouraging the youngsters here to come through, we have to talk about a story that's breaking not at Jumeirah Golf Estates but elsewhere in Bahrain, because Rehan Thomas has just won his second professional golf tournament. I've got that information from our friend Kent Gray, the editor of Golf Digest Middle East. He has published that on their website, golfdigestme.com. And I'm reading that Rehan, who's still just 19 years of age, has now won his second, 17 under par he finished, 5 shots clear of Matayam Kaiser. He's won the 11th King Hamad Trophy in Bahrain. And what an incredible trajectory he is on, Nick Tarrant.
Yes, and remember, he's an amateur. It's a professional event with amateurs, so he's still an amateur, Rehan. And congratulations to Rehan. That's a big victory, and it follows his Minotaur victory at the Creek, correct?
It certainly does, yes. Great victory, that, for Rehan. We will hopefully grab a word with him in the coming days as well. And there's a bit of a theme emerging over the course of the past couple of days. Okay, yes, Patrick Reed, Danny Willett, well-established on their various and respective tours. Take a little look beneath that, though. Jordan Smith, Matt Wallace, you've got Shubhanka Sharma as well. Young men, Nick, and that's the exciting thing. I'm not going to ask you about Rory McIlroy again and what he's up to in 2019, but when we look at the future of the European Tour, young men starting off very much still in the infancy of their careers, at the top of the leaderboard heading into the final day, it must be quite exciting for you and the rest of the team.
Yeah, just looking at that, 5 of the top 8 are Englishmen as well.
Yes.
So that's good for Robbie and I. So interesting to see how Danny Willett has had his challenges. He's 276 in the official world golf ranking now. But look at Lee Westwood. I just heard about the caddies. Remember last week his girlfriend caddied for him. So you don't always need a professional caddy to win. Please remember, when things go tough, probably the caddy is the first one to leave, along with the clubs, along with bad luck, along with the coach, and eventually perhaps the girlfriend or the wife.
Yes, exactly. Let's just strip everything back until I find my golf game again. That is very much the mantra, or at least the mantra for some of those on tour. But play has concluded here at Jumeirah Golf Estates. The final putts have been holed on the 18th green. So let's give you a quick rundown of exactly how the leaderboard shapes up going into tomorrow's final round, which of course is a public holiday. Nick Tarrant has urged you to come down here. We echo that sentiment. You've got to get down to Jumeirah Golf Estates and support, and just enjoy an incredible day of drama and golf at the highest level here at the course and the tournament. Patrick Reed and Danny Willett, 14 under par. They're your leaders overnight. Jordan Smith, the man who's been there or thereabouts since day one, that opening 66. He's at 13 under par following a 69. Lee Westwood is alongside Dean Burmester and Matt Wallace on 12 under par. The Englishman Westwood shot a 65 today. That is one of the lowest rounds of the day. Tom Lewis, Adrian Ortegi are at 11 under par. And then you go back to the 10 unders. Shubhankar Sharma, Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson and John Rahm, the name of Rory McIlroy, alongside Alex Noren, Alexander Bjork and Kiradek Appibarnrat at 9 under par.
Indeed, your man Tyrrell Hatton, 8 under. Francesco Molinari is down there. What is he? He's 6 under par, 5 under par in actual fact. Tommy Fleetwood, 6 under par. So the race to Dubai is done. Nick Tarrant is making that, you're making that kind of cutthroat symbol that essentially says the race to Dubai is absolutely done and dusted, and it's deservedly so. Francesco Molinari, what a year he's had, Nick.
Yeah, and it's come down to the third round of the final event. Yeah. So, you know, we must applaud Francesco's year, winning the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, the Open Championship, his performance at the Ryder Cup. But if someone's had a great year, well done. You know, you can criticise any point system or whatever, but he deserves it. He is our star for the year, and we'll crown him the Race to Dubai champion tomorrow at 4.
Right then, if we're doing that, come on then, Nick, at 1 minute to 5 before we clock off and hand back over to Tom Ucker and the gang down at Barasti with the grill. Who is going to be victorious tomorrow afternoon, about 4:30-ish? There or thereabouts, and what will be a thrilling day. Will it be Reed, will it be Willett, or will it be one of the men in the field chasing?
Well, just to the listeners, the final tee time will be around noon tomorrow, first tee time around 7 a.m, so there's plenty of action from first light almost right through. So we recommend you come up and have a great day out at Jumeirah Golf Estates.
Play to conclude around 4:30, Nick?
Yes, 4:10, the last ball, unless there's a playoff, so... and as long as Chris doesn't encourage any thunder and lightning, we'll be just after 4, and the presentation, we have a strong UA national party coming, and to help with the presentation from DP World and from Dubai Sports Council, so we're all set. But let me look at the leaderboard. I've been in meetings all afternoon, so thank you for this.
Just it's pin the tail on the donkey, Nick. Just pick a name. That's what I do.
I think they're all good stories. But if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I've told you many times, in our contract we're not allowed to gamble. Let me look. Big stories. I love to see all of them win. Patrick Reed, probably that's the one that would move the needle around the world. America's very important for DP World, our sponsors, Emirates, and particularly DP World.
Patrick's the biggest story, you think?
No, they're all big stories. You know, is it for sponsors or is it for sport?
Oh, yeah. Oh, now we're asking some open-ended questions at 1 minute to 5.
Patrick Reed, it is for you, Nicholas.
Yes, I'll stick with my pin in the donkey with the tail with Patrick Reed. You heard it here.
Come on then, Rob. You, not Tyrrell Hatton. Quickly, pick one. Who's winning tomorrow?
I'll go. I'm always drawn to the great Cinderella stories. I'll stick with my man, Lee Westwood, 2009 yeah. and 2018.
I'm kind of with you on that. I might just join you. It's not often we agree.
You're not allowed to.
Yeah, I'm going with Lee as well. We'll fight over that one and arm wrestle later on. That is it for us down here at the golf course. I'm conscious that Tom Ucker, Owais Shah and Matt Fortune are waiting to be handed back. A big day of sport. Rugby the focus, I'm sure, for those boys between now and 7 o'clock. Robbie and I are popping back up to the rooftop for our live Facebook, a little wrap on day 3. Essentially, we've just given you a wrap. We're about to do it for our Facebook, our social media fans. Not that we've got many, but we'll be doing that in the next 5 minutes or so. But for now, it's back over to Tom Ucker. News headlines first, then it's back with Tom down at Barasti with the grill. We are back here all day tomorrow to keep you bang up to date. The final round of the 2018 DP World Tour Championship. From all of us here on the golf course, have yourselves a lovely Saturday evening. Good night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.